What does it mean to be a Western yogi? How can someone who was born and raised in the West, who comes from a Judeo-Christian background, practice yoga and meditation in an authentic and genuine way? My name is Christopher Sartain, and this is the Western Yoga Podcast. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Western Yoga Podcast. It's a nice, peaceful fall morning here in the southern Andes Mountains at our little retreat center in Curarrehue, Chile. It's been snowing a lot and raining a lot, and usually the months with the most snow are July and August, and here we are in May. April and May have been very challenging already. But I'm dealing with it the best I can. It's May 9th, 2024, as I record this episode. The theme for today will be sound, om, pranava, shabda, nada, and I had a profound realization in 2011 during a course, a 300-hour course on Shabda Yoga with Graham Fowler, that I had the privilege and honor to participate in. I've mentioned Graham before on this podcast. He was, for many years, decades, the director of Peachtree Yoga Center in Atlanta, Georgia, which at that time was the preeminent yoga teacher training studio in the southeastern United States. I'm not sure if that's still the case. I haven't lived in Georgia since 2012. I left Georgia in 2012 and lived in Colorado for a couple of years and then moved to Chile, where I've been for the last 10 years. So I'm not really plugged into that scene anymore. But at that time, it was a scene, you know. And at the center of that scene was Graham. Now, he never called himself a guru or anything like that, but for all intents and purposes, he basically was. For those of you that are frequent listeners to this podcast, you know, my guru was Roy Eugene Davis, but, you know, Graham was also extremely important in my learning process and in my path. And he really had the juju, you know, he had the Shakti pot. It was powerful, you know, right up there with Roy, to be perfectly honest with you. And I learned a great deal from him. I studied with him sort of in parallel to Roy. So while I consider Roy to be my guru, Graham was right up there. And so I studied with both of them in parallel, and I learned different things from each one. At any rate, so I took a 200-hour yoga teacher training with Graham, where I learned vinyasa yoga, a little bit of yoga philosophy, pranayama, and whatnot. But then he also, at that time, offered a 300-hour teacher training. It wasn't really a teacher training. It was just a course, basically, on shabda yoga. And in that course, we learned about sound yoga. We practiced a lot of mantra yoga. Graham was a certified transcendental meditation teacher. He was a student of the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who was famously the, you know, the guru of the Beatles and all that, and he taught transcendental meditation. Well, Graham was a student of the Maharishi, and he taught transcendental meditation for some years. When I took that training with him, he taught something similar to TM, and we practiced a lot of that, and we practiced something known as Vedic rounding. We did 2 week-long retreats of Vedic rounding with him, where I had the to this day, still the deepest samadhi experience of my life was during one of those retreats there in the North Georgia mountains. I write about that in my first book, The Sacred Science of Yoga and the Five Koshas. I also write about the experience that I'm about to explain in that same book that I wrote in 2012. And at any rate, so that 300-hour course was transformative for me on many levels. And so we learned a lot about sound yoga, chanting, mantra, and meditation, Vedic grounding, all of that. And it was truly transformative and powerful. At any rate, in 2011, we were participating in part of that training. Graham had brought a Brahmin who knew the Samaveda. He was trained in the Samaveda. For those of you who don't know, the Samaveda is one of the four classical Vedas. You know, we've got the Rig Veda, Atharva Veda, Yajur Veda, Samaveda. And the Samaveda is really meant to be sung out loud, chanted. As a matter of fact, a lot of it is just syllables that really don't necessarily have any particular meaning in Sanskrit. So it's meant to be chanted, sung. It's extremely sacred. And at that time, when we learned parts of the... We didn't learn the entire Samaveda. It takes years. But we learned parts, bits and pieces of the Samaveda with this Brahmin during these workshops at Pitru Yoga. And at that time, there were only a few hundred Westerners in the entire world that had learned any of the Samaveda, really. This was in 2011. I'm sure that's changed by now. So we were extremely fortunate. And there were females in that group as well, in that course, my wife being one of them. And they were really just, I mean, there were only, I don't know the exact numbers, but there were very few women in the entire world that had ever even chanted the Samaveda before. And so we were extremely privileged and honored to be able to participate in the learning of the Samaveda. And at one point, for one of the weekends that we spent with him, we literally chanted all day, every day for like 10 hours, I want to say. 10 hours on Saturday. Yeah, that's right. And 10 hours on Sunday. We were literally just chanting the entire day, learning this sacred text, learning how to chant the text. And it's a very interesting way of singing that the Brahmins use to chant the Samaveda. It's not like typical Sanskrit mantras that you might hear. They use a lot more, vibrato in their voices. I'm going to sing a sample of the Samaveda known as the Soma Veda in just a few minutes so you can hear what that sounds like. So at any rate, that weekend, we were chanting like 10 hours a day, all day. At one point, around, I believe it was around noon time on Sunday, the second day, I believe, I started to have visions while we were chanting. And it was incredibly psychedelic. I know this because I have experience with those things as well. And so I have a basis for comparison. And this was very much like that. The walls inside the studio there at Pitru Yoga began to pulsate and vibrate and fluctuate. The Brahmin himself, he began to become wavy and vibratory. Then the floor began to become vibratory. I began to see geometric patterns take form all around me, and everything became vibratory. I saw everything as wave forms. And multicolored patterns of wave forms, vibrations. And so I had this experience. It lasted for about 30 minutes to an hour. And at some point I had to leave the room and go into a separate little room by myself to sort of come down from the experience and process everything that had just happened. And so essentially the realization was that everything is vibration. We live in a vibratory reality. And again, if you're interested in reading more about that experience, I write about it in that book from 2012, The Sacred Science of Yoga and the Five Koshas, in more detail. But essentially, yeah, I had this realization that everything is vibration. Everything is vibratory. All of manifest reality is vibrating. And that really the only thing that isn't vibrating is our true nature as pure consciousness. And so, this, you know, I had read that before, but one thing is to read something, and another thing is to experience it directly. So, you know, this is the difference really between mysticism and religion, of course. So religion is based upon beliefs and philosophy, you know, a lot of times. And so we're asked to believe certain things about the divine in a religion. But in what any kind of mystical tradition, we are invited to experience the divine directly. And so that's really the difference between religion and mysticism. Belief versus experience. Belief versus experience or knowledge. And so my guru, Roy Eugene Davis, said often, don't be a believer, be a knower. And so don't worry about trying to believe things that you may have read about the divine or heard about the divine. Try to know the divine directly. Experience it directly for yourself. And so this experience I had was certainly a very mystical experience. One of the most mystical experiences I've ever had in my life. And I've had quite a few, including two out-of-body experiences and a few samadhi experiences. But this vision, I don't have a lot of visions. I mean, I have very vivid lucid dreams at times. But when I'm in the waking state, I don't typically have visions. Well, when I was younger, I mean, in my, you know, late teenage years, early 20s, when I was experimenting with some things, yeah, okay, but certainly never just in a normal, sober, waking state, chanting. You know, that was not expected. It came as quite a surprise. And for that reason, I consider it to be a slightly more authentic, genuine vision. And people can argue about that, you know, that's fine, but people can argue about everything. But at any rate, so my realization or revelation or insight at that time was that the entire manifest realm is vibratory, and it's a lot like sound. And so I came to see the entire universe as a song. Well, that's not entirely accurate. I came to see the universe as God singing actively. You know, the universe is a verb, it's not a noun. you know, a song has a beginning and an end, of course, and it's played the same way each time, and it has a very definable melody and harmony and all these things. So the universe is not a song, it is God actively singing. It is an active unfoldment occurring, always occurring, always unfolding, always developing, always evolving. And so we can even say that it's sort of like a jazz player improvising. There might be some basic melody there, some programming, as it were. But there's also some spontaneous improvisation that occurs as it unfolds. And so I came to see all of manifest reality as sound, as a grand symphony unfolding, somehow being sung by this divine intelligence that we often refer to as God. Call it what you will. And so I came to see the universe as God singing. And I came to see all of manifest reality as sound, more or less. And I didn't realize it at the time, but that was essentially what Graham was trying to get across to us in that 300-hour course. More or less. I mean, he never directly came out and told me that, but that's my inference. And I'm a bit of a musician, amateur musician. You know, I like a lot of different kinds of music. Yeah, I've talked about that before on the podcast. And so I already had this sort of bent towards music and sound. So that Shabda, yoga course, Shabda, by the way, means sound, or sacred sound. Also called Nada yoga in other systems. And at any rate, so that was my realization or revelation, chanting the Samaveda that day at Peachtree Yoga Center in Atlanta, Georgia in 2011. Is really profound and transformative, meaning it changed me. It changed my life. It changed how I view the universe and all of that. It was a really beautiful, magical, mystical experience that I have not repeated to this day. There's been several experiences like that in my life. And I've really come to the conclusion recently that it's not all that useful for me to try and repeat experiences or try and replicate previous experiences. As I already told you, in 2012, I had my most profound, what I would call samadhi experience. And to this day, I mean, I've had shorter, more condensed little experiences kind of like that, but not on that level. And I meditate almost every day. Well, you know, sometimes it's like that, I guess. That's not to say that perhaps in the future I won't have another experience like that. Maybe I will. Maybe I won't. And that's okay. That's okay. That, you know, for me, that's part of santosha or contentment, just acceptance and being content in all circumstances and situations. You know, hopefully I will, but if I don't, it's not the end of the world, because that one experience left a residue in my being that persists to this day. And it really transformed me, just as this vision transformed me, just as my out-of-body experiences transformed me and all of that. And so these experiences are transformative, so maybe you don't have to repeat them constantly. I don't know. I don't have all the answers, folks. At any rate, right now, I'd like to sing part of the Samaveda for you, known as the Soma Veda. And this is an incredibly sacred chant. So if you're doing something, you know, cleaning, or some of my listeners have told me they like to listen to me while they're cleaning their house or doing dishes, or, you know, outside going for a walk, they listen with their headphones and whatnot. That's okay. But I ask humbly that, you know, maybe you sit down and close your eyes and really enjoy this.
So Chakso Sada Vatra Yatra Shroyam Sada Sada Vatra Yatra Yeya Sada
enjoyed that recitation of the Soma Veda, again part of the Sama Veda, my favorite little chunk of the Sama Veda. It's part of my sadhana. I don't chant it daily, but fairly often. And I find that energetically it's very good for me, very purifying. And elevating, very sattvic, very sattvic. And so I'd like to read a few quotes from different sacred texts regarding Om, regarding this primordial sound, this primordial vibration that emanates from the Godhead. In the Yoga Sutras, in Pada 1, Sutra 27, or Chapter 1, Verse 27, says the manifesting evidential aspect of God is Om. In verse 28, it says, one should meditate on this word, contemplating and surrendering to it. And on verse 29, it says, meditation on Om results in cosmic consciousness and the removal of all mental and physical obstacles to success on the spiritual path. Of course, there are various translations of all of these things. No two Sanskrit scholars can agree on most of the translations of these texts, but I think that's pretty good translation. And the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, which is one of my favorite yoga texts, I always tell people when they ask me which, you know, ancient texts should I be reading, I always recommend to start with the Upanishads, and then the Bhagavad Gita, and then the Yoga Sutras, and then to finish with the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, because I feel that the yoga explained in the Hatha Yoga Pradipika is the most developed and evolved, because it was written much later than those other texts, and so all of those ideas had a lot of time to gestate in ancient India. And at any rate, so in the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, we find many verses. It says, here now begins the teaching of Nada Yoga, or Shabda Yoga, and they use the word Nada, as taught by Goreksnath, accessible to all, even those with no experience of yoga. That was chapter 4, verse 65. Verse 66 says, hearing the nada is the most important of all meditative absorptions. And in verse 68, chapter 4, verse 68, a clear, distinct sound is heard in the Shishumna when the ears, eyes, mouth, and nose are closed. Verse 70, when Anahata chakra is penetrated, the nada is a blissful feeling, like polyphonic tinkling vibrating in the body. Tingling, I believe. Polyphonic tingling vibrating in the body, sorry. Verse 72 and 73, then the prana unites from the Ida and Pingala nadis and enters the Vishuddha chakra, and there is a blissful feeling above the soft palate and a sound of a low drum or conch shell. Verses 74, 75, the prana rises to the Agna chakra. In that space, the beating of a drum is heard. Being beyond thought, the supreme bliss arises. And I'll just keep reading without telling you the verses. Prana passes through Agna chakra and rises to the Sahasrara chakra. There is the sound of a flute. Reality is attained. This is Raja Yoga. Meditating between the brows quickly brings samadhi. Indescribable bliss arises in the heart of the yogi who meditates on the nada. Close both ears and listen to the sound until the mind becomes steady. Practicing this sound meditation diminishes exterior sounds. Through listening to the nada for 15 days, the yogi overcomes all obstacles and feels blissful. Loud sounds are initially heard. Subtler ones are heard as practice grows. The ocean, thunder, a large waterfall, low drums, a large bell, a conch shell, horn, flute, tinkling chimes, bees or crickets. After hearing the loud sounds, fix the mind on the subtlest of the subtle sounds. Keep the mind steady on the nada, even when it moves from the gross to the subtle or from the subtle to the gross. Whatever sound the mind is drawn to, settle on it, adhere to it, and become absorbed in it. And then in the Amrita Bindu Upanishad, verse 16, it says, Om is the divine sound. The sound beyond Om is a silent echo of Om. Meditate on that silence to know reality. Yoga Taravali, written by Adi Shankara at the beginning of the 9th century, Says verse 2, the highest of all absorptions is Nada Yoga, from which the highest form of samadhi will arise. Verse 4, precious Nada Yoga and the power of prana will reabsorb with the anatta chakra and reality will be reached. And of course in the Bible, you know, we also have some verses in the book of John, for example, the chapter 1, verse 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. That pretty much sums it up, doesn't it? And so we can see in the ancient text the importance of this sound. It's described as a sound, this vibratory reality that emanates from the Godhead. In Samkhya philosophy, we also have this idea that Om is this primordial vibration out of which the rest of manifest reality flows, and this Om vibration, because it is a waveform, has a peak, a trough, and a rising and falling action. From the trough emanates tamas guna, which is this sort of dense energy. From the rising and falling action emanates raja guna, which is sort of this activating energy. And then from the peak arises sattva guna, which is this elevating influence that we're always trying to tap into as yogis. And so we can see this relationship between sound and the manifest reality, or prakriti, as it's called. And so, again, for me, it's very helpful to think in terms of God singing the universe, and that this is just a beautiful divine symphony of sound. This is especially useful for people that are musically inclined, but anyone can use this philosophy or this approach in their spirituality. I'll definitely talk more about this in future episodes. I would encourage everyone to visit the Kriya Yoga Alliance website, kriyayogaalliance.com, and participate in our Sunday meditations. We offer them every Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you'll find the Zoom link there on the webpage and find out more about the Kriya Yoga teachers involved in the Kriya Yoga Alliance. And I hope y'all will join us there. And if you have not gotten a copy of my new book yet, Sartain Method Breathwork, I think I talked about it in the last podcast episode. I think y'all will really enjoy that book and benefit from it. It's a pranayama therapy method that I've developed over the last few years. And I teach it here, and I certify pranayama therapists or breathwork therapists here in Chile, and I have some of my own clients that I work with and offer breathwork to them, and they've really benefited from the system or method. So I hope y'all will buy that book. You'll learn how to create a personalized, individualized sequence of breathwork to bring more balance and health and vitality to your life. Many blessings. Namaste.